explain a little bit more about this quality of loving kindness, metta, what this is, and about the cultivation, since we have begun already doing that. So this is one of several qualities that Buddha talked about as encouraging us to cultivate, and as actually the abode of the gods, so divine abodes that you can actually live in on earth through cultivation of these qualities. And this first one of metta is one about cultivating the heart of well-wishing or of kindness. And it's a well-wishing or kindness that's there without strings attached, so without conditions. So unconditional love, if you wish. But one of my favorite translations of this is as the force of unstoppable friendliness. So just a force, a sense of positive regard towards oneself or towards another being that's there, regardless of what's delivered up in return. So in that way, it's actually a great sense, source of strength and a sign of strength to be able to have this sense of well-wishing regardless of what is coming back at you. You know, so it's unmitigated by someone else not following a script or someone else's bad mood or someone else looking at you a certain way or saying something to you. And this last exercise that we did of imagining those from whom you feel like you have received this in the past, I think is a helpful one just to get a sense of what that is like, you know, if you have had that in your life in any way. And sometimes we might get that even for a short time from someone who we encounter, even who we don't know. You know, sometimes it's like someone you encounter on the bus or in a store, ticket taker or something, who just seems for no good reason that you can, you know, unearth to have some positive regard towards you. And it's such a beautiful thing in that moment, you know. They just seem to be beaming and not needing something from you in return, right? So to connect with that sense of that possibility of positive regard, friendliness, kindness. So the root of this is also can be from wisdom of understanding that as living beings, you know, we take birth in this world and it's actually a very fragile existence for all of us. So as soon as we take birth, there are the possibility of pain and suffering in our life, of physical harm happening to us, of being cold, of being hungry, of having good things happen to us, but also of having difficult things happen to us. And for all of us as living beings, that's not fully under our control. You know, it's not under our control, and everyone gets a mixed bag of things. So no matter what the circumstances are of your birth, even if your family is wealthy or even if you are born with a lot of advantages, you're still subject to all of this vicissitudes of life. So understanding that this is the case for all of us, then it's like, oh, what could be an attitude that I have for others? I can't control their fate. I kind of in control my own fate. But at least I can regard people with an intention of well-wishing or of kindness. So this could be contrasted from either an attitude of neutrality, just ignoring them, or considering them like part of the furniture, or, you know, nothing important to me if you can't do something for me right now. Right? And also contrasted with an attitude of hostility, like you're a competitor to me, or you're in my way, or I dislike you, or something like that. So you can notice what it feels like when you have that attitude of either neutrality or hostility towards other beings, or when they have that attitude towards you. Yeah. So this does not place you in the transformed field of love, but you're suddenly in some field of competition or on the war field. Yeah. And it's really interesting to notice like how quickly this flips for us. You know, how quickly this can flip from even neutrality or positive regard to suddenly feeling a sense of competition for resources or time or a seat or whatever it is. You know. And we can drop, you know, we've like very high mobility from the heaven realm to the hell realm, just like that. It's like shoot, like right. So you take a new birth like this in the land of competition and warfare and jealousy and right, like that. But the good news is recognizing that this mobility all happens in the mind. You know, this mobility is there in the mind. So the elevator goes both ways. You know, the realms. So we can learn to practice the wholesome mind states and practice this sense of kindness, well-wishing. And with each of the states that we're going to practice, there's often one that's called the near enemy, that's like close to that state but not fully that state. There's one, the far enemy, that's usually easier to recognize as not that state. So abject hatred is obviously the opposite of this sense of kindness and well-wishing. The one with this one that's close but not that is a sense of love but with some sense of attachment or conditions. And for most of us, because we're, you know, not fully awakened beings and you know, kind of a mixed bag, a lot of our relationships are actually imbued with, you know, some mixed amount of pure love, but then sometimes little conditions. And sometimes we don't even see what those conditions are or know that until usually someone stops following our conditions, and then it becomes clear that there were conditions that they have now broken because our feelings change, right? So it's like, you might think like, oh yeah, I have a general sense of well-wishing towards you, until this person starts acting a certain way or not acting a certain way, or, you know, is late too many times or doesn't return your phone call in some amount of time, or engages in whatever behavior that is not according to your script, right? So as a spiritual practitioner, this is where it actually gets really interesting, and where, you know, the one who we consider to be the enemy actually can be the teacher or the friend, because it's really easy to have this sense of well-wishing and love towards those who also have this towards you or who regard you well and so on, but here's where you can see the challenges, you know, the heart that pulls up short from this. So it's a very interesting place to notice and to practice. So there are many different ways of cultivating this state of metta, well-wishing. And one way that is often a way that's done on retreats, sort of has become sort of traditional, is to begin where it's easiest of well-wishing. Oftentimes begin with oneself, who ideally is easy to wish for, although not always. Then to consider your mentor or a really close loved one, then friends, then to consider people who are kind of neutral, who you don't know, and then to consider people who are actually difficult for you, so people who are hostile or enemy, something like that. So this is an interesting way of doing it, because it's recognizing that there's kind of this this mandala that we create in our minds of many different rings. You know, it's kind of like the rings of different orbits and planets or something like that. You know, and there's those who are in our inner circle, who we love and wish well for and consider their feelings and care for them. And then there's a little bit further out that we, you know, generally do maybe with a little less strength, or we don't think about them as much. Then there's a huge amount of people in this middle, neutral realm, which we don't regard at all. That's usually populated by like 6.75 billion at least, right? Quite large people, amount of people in that, you know. And then there's the outer realm, that is the realm of people who are difficult for us. That might be particular individuals. For some people, it's kind of some category of people who are difficult for us. Also interesting to notice that, you know, this mandala becomes kind of like it's like an overlay, you know, that gets transferred. So, for example, if you think about in grade school or something, you know, you took birth in grade one, some class, and then pretty soon there's kids who are your friends, you know, kids who are like your sort of allies. There are kids who might be difficult for you or bully you or you don't like them. There's kids you don't pay that much attention to, you know. The teacher could fall somewhere in there, right, depending. Then you go to the next grade, and then it's basically the same mandala, just populated with different people, like pop, 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 you know. And then you go to middle school, it's like, same thing comes there, but there's like different, you know, it's sort of like fill in the blanks with different pictures in that way, you know, high school, or then college, and then you take a job, and it's like, we're constantly repopulating this mandala, you know. I'll pull another sports metaphor that, you know, and they show the, if you watch a baseball game, they show the field, and it's like the different positions, first base, second base, third base, and then now sometimes on TV they pop up the little, you know, baseball cards of who's in those positions. But it's all transferable, like who's going to be in which position. So it's like, oh, today playing first base, this one, and third base, and, you know. Then this guy gets injured, and then someone else pops in, right? So it's really like that with our kind of meta mandala of our universe that keeps getting recreated. It's like, you know, now, you know, batting for the enemy is like, boom. The new one comes to the new job, and then that one goes and something else, you know. Or sometimes our loved ones, for example, move between, you know, very close and easy to wish well for them, and then they get pushed further out, and then distant, and then they move back in, and, you know. And then most interesting also is to notice in relation to oneself, you know, who also in the Buddhist teaching is considered no one who is more worthy of love also than oneself, you know, and no one whom one knows better also, you know, than oneself. No one with whom one is more, you know, intimate with the vicissitudes of life in this way. But also we can find our own, you know, baseball card popping up in these different places. You know, sometimes the outer realm, we have antipathy because our body is not operating the way that we'd like it to, or we're not manifesting in a way that aligns with the carefully cultivated sense of self that we want to have, and we become the enemy, you know. Or just conditioned patterns come up of self-hatred, this and that, you know. And then sometimes we're the beloved, you know. So we also take birth in our own mandala in all these different places, right? So like actually the mandalas that are created out of sand, it's good to recognize, you know, these are these temporary constructions, and then phew, it's gone, and then it comes again, and then it's gone, and it comes again, you know. So it's all very relative and impermanent, and yet we believe in it, you know, so much. Like we really buy into this as it plays out all the time, like it's absolutely true. So it's helpful to just take it with a grain of salt, you know, observe the arising of this and be able to see the relativity of this, you know, the impermanence of this too. And then recognize the, you know, also some of the ways in which this training of the mind and heart can cut through that. You know, it's like a solvent for this too. So this practice of metta is helpful for that. So also helpful to say that as we do this practice, you know, the idea is with this recognition of this sense of well-wishing and the cultivation through phrases, through intention or visualization or different ways, we're planting the seeds for the state to arise in that moment. We're also planting the seeds for that state to arise in the future. So this is basically like skillful understanding of cause and effect and karma, right? So we're hoeing the row of metta seeds here, you know, planting them like that. Right? And it's not necessarily in your control also whether how that feels or what it manifests like in the moment. So sometimes as you're doing this practice, saying it, you feel a strong sense directly of sense of metta, of kindness, of love, you know, whole range. And then sometimes you don't. So in this practice, like your effort, the effort in this is to just take each phrase or to connect with the visualization with as much just sincerity as you can muster up in that moment, and then let it go, and then do it again, and then do it again, and then do it again, right? So in some ways, this is like a devotional practice too. You know, there's like a act of devotion to, it seems like whoever is the object that you're paying attention to, but actually it's in some ways devotion to love itself or to metta itself, you know. And with devotion means a certain loyalty, sort of constancy to that. So the usual things will come up that come up in mind training. So one is the wandering mind. So you start to wonder, like, what's for lunch? When are we going to break for lunch? Should I eat outside or inside? What should I do? Should I go out? You know, right. Or whatever, you know, you think about your what you did this morning, or you worry about something at work, so you know, it's just the mind doing its thing, but part of the training, whenever you notice that, just bring it back again, you know, come back. So with training of the mind and heart, it's helpful to be also very patient and, you know, even have this attitude of metta towards oneself in the training. And, you know, consider like training the dog, a puppy dog, to sit still, you know. And if anyone's ever trained a puppy, it doesn't sit still naturally, maybe. It's like, it's taught to sit, it sits, then it sees a squirrel and starts to run away, then bring it back, sit, and starts to scratch. You're like, okay, sit. Then it falls asleep, and, okay. Sit, you know, and rolls over to be petted. Okay, sit, you know. So just being very patient with that puppy dog of the mind, just bringing it back again. But we don't have to hate it for the antics, really. It's not helpful to, it's the opposite, right? And that includes also not being, or try not to be alarmed when the opposite does happen. So as part of this cultivation of metta, or of any of these positive states, it's considered a purification practice too. So sometimes what seems to launch, and this can alarm you, is actually the opposite. So you're having this sense of well-wishing towards yourself or others, and then a huge sense of irritation or hatred might arise. And like, wow, where did that come from? Like, I must be doing it wrong in some ways. So actually, that's part of the process, is that sometimes this stuff will launch. And one way to think about that is that as part of a practice of purification, that's it's actually okay, you know. Consider okay, so just allow that to be there and then let it go. So one metaphor for that is like, you know, if you're washing clothes and the wash water gets dirty, you know, stuff gets dirty, and you don't have to worry about it, the water will drain away. So similarly, as you're doing this practice, this unwholesome, difficult stuff might come up. So don't try not to get too alarmed about it, like you're doing it wrong or it's like totally going off course, but try to recognize it when it's there and then let it go as you can. So I'll see if there's any questions about the practice we've done so far or something that's happened in your experience. Yeah.
Somebody talked about this before, but if you, kind of when your mind does get into the thoughts or the best way to get it back, would you say just kind of through the breathing or just kind of get it back?
In this case, it's just, you know, like if you're doing the practice that is using the phrases, for example, even with the walking, it's actually just to begin again with that. So, you know, at whatever point you realize that you've been lost in thought or something, just like come back again and then begin anew with, okay, may I be peaceful and happy, may I be strong and healthy, yeah, something like that. So in some ways, like, that is the proxy for what you might use the breath as an anchor, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a clear question, but I'll make a statement and then maybe you can figure out what my question is. So with my metta practice over the last month or 2 months, I have been unable to offer it to myself. And so I've been not letting myself do the follow on.
Mm.
It's like, okay, no, you're going to feel this for yourself first.
Mm.
Just when we were walking, I had like a small realization of, okay, if I feel, I know I can cultivate metta for the whole world. Everybody wants to be happy and safe and peaceful. And mm-hmm. then I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm part of that world.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, was I doing the right thing and not letting myself go on to the easy, like the, everyone else, even the difficult people were easier than myself.
Mm.
So like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you figured it out in some ways, or it got figured out. It figured itself out. Because sometimes, actually, through contemplation, like what you did, is recognizing, like, oh, it's, you know, I can wish well to the whole world, but wait a minute, I'm also in the world, so then I'm also a recipient and worthy is good. And with this kind of practice, it actually is like start where it's easier. And so, actually, if you're not easier, then I think it's okay to not start with and force yourself, you know. And like a little bit in the phrasing of what you were, you know, I can't remember the exact phrasing you said, but it's something like, you know, like, I will stay with, you know. So it didn't sound very metaful, that
no,
it's like, you will love yourself. You will not leave the room, no dinner until you love, right? You know, like, that's not that, doesn't feel like that, you know, the attitude of metta is imbued in that attitude towards the practice, right? So there's many different interesting twists and turns as we try to cultivate the mind, because it's like, you know, this delusion is there in many different forms. So if you can recognize that, you know, it's kind of like, what is the, I mean, like if you're doing in Vipassana practice, sort of recognizing like, what's the attitude of mind that's, you know, here, like, is there grasping, leaning, pushing down, bearing down, right? So even in relationship to the breath or whatever it is. So in this case, it sounded like, you know, there's a bearing down on the phrases and on the sense of metta, which is, of course, like the opposite of it. So it doesn't, you're actually cultivating then coercion or something, you know. So I would say then just to recognize like, oh, look, like I've been chipped out to the outskirts of that metta. So then actually starts where it's easiest, and then sort of as that gets stronger, you could include yourself in it too. But also the way that it happened for you of just contemplation of like, oh, I'm wishing well to the whole world, and like, there I am in it, is also good. So,
I have a question that is about practicing in relationship. So I guess for several years in my practice, I was really focused on acceptance, of having been more oriented toward action in the past, and so recognizing that what I needed to work with in relationship was accepting how things were more than trying to make them different. And yet there is a place for action, for wise action. And so I had a situation this week where a colleague, friend, was not following the script, and we have different communication styles, and not returning my calls as expected, kind of thing.
Right.
And it definitely brought up my own stuff of, you know, not feeling seen or whatever it was. So I worked with that for a day and saw it really as an opportunity. And I can practice metta for myself and this person, and I understand, you know, a broader context. And yet, I wonder about the role of action, and, you know, when do we speak our preferences?
Yeah.
And so if you could talk a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm sure many people could relate to this question in some ways, right? And it definitely is not suggesting, I would say, that like we shouldn't take action. It's just to pay attention to the maybe the intention from which we're taking that action. And also, like, I think it's helpful that you recognize, like, oh, yeah, this is my habitual tendency. Like, my habitual tendency is this, like, to immediately go, like, take action. Because someone else might have the opposite tendency. Like, some people might recognize, like, oh, I usually never say anything, right? So then, so there's some amount of just working with our conditioning, too. And the benefit of mindfulness also is to give us some space to respond rather than just habitually react in whatever way that we usually do, right? So, yeah, I think it's totally possible and appropriate to talk to people about things like that, like, hey, I called you. Why aren't you recording? You know, like, but it also is like good, even from an effectiveness standpoint, to recognize like the way that I talk to that person does also influence the relationship, right? And even the success of that interaction. So if you go to them and you're all mad and you're like, why didn't you return my call? You know, kind of yelling at them, then immediately they're already off balance, isn't that right? But if we even sometimes reflection can help too, is consider like, okay, I don't know why they didn't return the call. Like, maybe they are careless and they're not, you know, or they have disregard. But maybe something big happened in their life that I don't know about. You know, maybe like their mom is sick, or they just got diagnosed with something. Like, I don't know. So then if we can go and ask them the question, but it could be like a more open-ended kind of thing, because it's like, oh, I don't know what happened. Let me find out. As opposed to like, I know what happened and I know why you did it, and, you know, that kind of thing, I think. So it's helpful to recognize, like, when we get in that place of, like, fixed view, basically, of, like, I know this, like, I know who you are, I know who I am, I know what happened, you know. And it's also one of those ones where we could recognize, like, when people come at us like that, it's harder to be in relationship with them, right? Because then first you have to fight their, like, very rigid story that they already have about you and about what happened. So I guess, you know, part of that sense of metta could be like also that sense of openness, or like, which doesn't mean you don't want to say anything, but it's like, oh, what's the spirit in which you're going to say it? And basically also you do your best, because, you know, if you're like, I need to resolve this today, and I'm still not feeling metta-full today, I'm still, you know, then you kind of do your best with it, I guess. I mean, it could be skillful if you're really mad about something to wait a little while, because usually it does abate a little bit as time goes on, but recognize, like, oh, what is it also that's, you know, what's the story I'm telling that's, like, causing this to, it's, like, refueling my sense of, like, righteousness or whatever, you know. But it's definitely true, like, sometimes people are inappropriate, or, you know, they do things that are out of line, and, like, I think it's totally legitimate to call people on that, and call yourself on that, and get called on that, and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, just some thoughts about that. It's not all one thing, but it's helpful to be attentive to it, and also to recognize, like, you don't do it perfectly, too. So sometimes you may err on one side of, like, waiting too long, and sometimes you might get into it with them, and you don't have the perfect tone, and, you know, then later you might apologize, or, you know, you just do your best with it. So yeah, it's not saying you have to be passive about such things in relationships. But take interest, like it sounds like you did, you know, in that whole phenomenon too. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
I kind of have a related question. That was a really good question. And that is, you know, that unstoppable friendliness, I really like that. And I wonder, like, you know, so I hear stuff and I'm practicing and then I try to apply it in my life elsewhere, right? And so, like, something just happened fairly recently where I work downtown and going down this, I kind of go between buildings underground, doing this passageway. And so there's this mentally ill person, or maybe he was on drugs, I don't know, but he's saying, he's following me all the way, saying, you know, can you wish me a happy birthday? I just want, you know, but it scared me.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, in applying this unstoppable friendliness, could I have just said, you know, happy birthday? You know what I mean? It's like that, kind of that boundary. I mean, kind of talking about what's the wise action.
Yeah.
But how do you kind of flex that? Because I also have had those experiences, far and few, where that unstoppable friendliness has actually changed it with a stranger.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like where it becomes very creative, and, you know, so here we're practicing in training circumstances, and then you're in the messiness of, like, other people and interactions and things like that, and, yeah, different things happen, right? So so it's possible, like, that's one possible response, is that you just would turn around and wish them with as much well-wishing as you can, like, happy birthday, you know, as ridiculous as it seems, or, you know, in the tunnel and not knowing if it's the birthday or whatever, right? And then go on, right? But also, like, to consider both the other person but also yourself, too, so your own sense of, you know, if in that case you're feeling unsafe, also to have a sense of kindness, compassion for yourself, you know? So sometimes it is that, like, oh, to continue to interact with this person or to actually engage with them feels, makes me feel less safe underground and stuff like that. So then, like, I need to keep walking right now. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, in all these cases, like, what the exact perfect response is, you know? So we kind of do our best, again, in that way, right? Because unstoppable friendliness is both for yourself and for the other, and for both of you together, you know, in the tunnel downtown, right? It's like, you know, and then, you can sort of expand it out. It's like for all beings trapped in tunnels with people trying to make them say things that they don't want to say, or, you know, like, because it happens, you know, and there's, like, all these different tunnels, you know, all over the world in which people are having coerced interactions of some kind, right? It's part of the city, really, you know. I can, as you said that, I imagined all these different underpasses that, you know, I've been in, and, like, yeah, it's a, can be a difficult, awkward moment of samsara, right? So, you know, later on you could reflect on it with some, you know, maybe humor or spaciousness or something, but in the moment you do your best with that, and I think considering both your own, you know, your relationship to yourself with metta as well as to that other good. But yeah, it seems like wishing people happy birthday is never a wrong move, really. So, okay, maybe one more and then we'll have to break.
I just have an experience I want to share. So I've never done walking metta before. Mm, okay. I've always done sitting. And so for me, it was interesting initially to just bring that intention to every phrase I was saying. Mm-hmm. But eventually, I started to try and feel it mm-hmm. in my body and mind. What does happy and peaceful feel like?
Yeah.
Or what does healthy and strong feel like?
Yeah.
And that was, it was very cool.
Great.
So second part is that, is that okay to do? I mean, just to kind of think and feel it?
Yeah, it's good to do. I mean, that's actually a way of connecting with sincerity to each phrase, is actually really feeling what the meaning of that is. You know, even in the moment. And that's where, like, when you're doing it for yourself, it's easier to connect with that because the body is there, too. So, yeah, that sounds great.
Thanks.
Yeah. So we'll take a break for lunch,